Government transparency has many problems, and they don't just stop at the federal government. We're actually here today with Bob Dick with the Commonwealth Foundation, and we have Anna McCausland.
Very good.
Saying that right? Very good. Thank you.
Very good.
Joining us in studio today, because we're going to be talking about none other than Governor Wolf's tax budget proposal. Is it called the tax budget proposal? It's probably just called a budget proposal, but it should be called the tax budget proposal, right?
Tax and spend budget proposal would be excellent.
Well, there we go.
Excellent term for it.
So we're going to be talking about that this morning. You can call in with your questions at 610-539-TALK, 610-539-8255. Both Bob and Anna, they devote all their time to researching these issues happening in our local government, meaning Pennsylvania, happening in our state government, so that you can know that you're informed and that you can make even a good voting decision when the time comes around. But right now, though, we're dealing with this just merely in our legislature. So go ahead, and Anna, go ahead, tell us what's happening here with the budget proposal.
Well, so far, you know, we have a constitutional deadline to get something passed by June 30th. I am the policy director for Americans for Prosperity. I'm the lead lobbyist and cat herder in Harrisburg. And what I'm hearing is that the Senate Republicans and the House Republicans, who are in charge of both chambers, they are going to be having an agreement. And hopefully they can send something to the governor's desk and just let him either accept it or reject it. His proposal, which had zero votes on the House floor earlier this month, was all or nothing. So I think the House Republicans and the Senate Republicans can come to an agreement that doesn't spend a whole lot more than what we're looking at, doesn't increase taxes, and, you know, let the governor just accept it.
And what does all or nothing mean when you say that? All or nothing meaning, because as being on the Hill, so to speak, of Pennsylvania, you know what that means. But what does all or nothing mean in this debate?
It means
now?
That our governor, and so in Pennsylvania, the governor has a little blue pen, as I call it, a blue line veto, and he can reject parts of the budget. Actually, Governor Corbett did that last year because a lot of his priorities were not in the budget. Liquor wasn't in the budget. Pension reform was not in that budget. So he can take his little blue pen and line item veto things.
And that's the all or nothing. He is choosing, though, to make it all or nothing.
Yeah, he said that first with his budget proposal. He said, here's my budget proposal. It raises taxes. And the Commonwealth Foundation has some excellent pieces on that. And that's their real strong point, researching all of this, getting into the numbers. But he said to the House and Senate, you need to accept this. Not pick it apart. So they put it in a bill and it failed 193-0.
Yeah, and that's the famous, yeah, because I remember that being in the news, 193-0.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't get any more loud than that, at least from the legislature. Well, Bob, what are the numbers on this? Tell us the numbers.
So, first off, largest tax increase in history, $4.5 billion in the first year. That's without any property tax relief. Also, you have a spending increase, which would be the largest in about a quarter of a century. It's about 9%, depending on how you look at it. So this really is a budget that taxes a lot and spends a lot. And to Anna's point about this being a holistic budget, that was the point, really, of the Republicans' proposal to have a vote on his plan. Because what happened was Chairman Markosik was actually proposing to have the spending, or to have a vote on the spending side of Governor Wolf's proposal. And so Republicans said, okay, you want the spending side of the proposal, you also have to vote on the tax side of the proposal. And then, of course, not one single vote in the House for that, because, again, one of the largest tax increases in history, and there was not a lot of support for his plan when you look at it holistically.
And that was the 193-0 that we were
right.
just talking
yes.
about that before. But now, basically, it's going to be coming back. That's what Governor Wolf is going to be trying to do. And is it a whole lot different?
What do you mean by a whole lot different?
Well, is it so this vote, 193-0, okay? That was kind of a loud sound off by the legislature mm-hmm. against what Governor Wolf's proposal was, okay? Mm-hmm. So now I'm guessing that there are going to be some amendments to that. There are going to be some changes to that, if any.
Well, the legislation was shot down, and it was actually introduced by a Republican from York County because, as Bob said, there were no Democrats that were willing to put that tax plan into legislation. There were, I'm hearing, anywhere from 20 to 30 Democrats who really did want to vote for the governor's plan, but you can't get legislation passed with 23 votes in either chamber. So the legislature, the way it has to work at this point is that the House has introduced their budget, the House Republicans introduced their budget. It's very, I think, almost identical to what was passed last year. Spending bills have to come from the House in Pennsylvania. So I'm foreseeing that the House will send something to the Senate. The Senate Republicans will then probably make some changes. You know, it's going to go, leadership's going to have some discussions about it. But then legislation will then have to go to the governor's desk. But it's not going to be his tax and spend plan. That's done at this point.
So now, even if this tax and spend plan, standing on its own, the taxes that would be added, were they even going to be able to cover for the spending there, Bob?
Yes, but actually there was a recent development where the Wolf administration found that the structural deficit, so the deficit going in the out years, in the fiscal out years, actually there would be a deficit even with his plan. I believe it's about $300 million. Yeah, close to $300 million. So even his plan would still see, we would still see a deficit. And it really, it's a matter of not necessarily increasing taxes on Pennsylvanians, because they already had the 10th highest tax burden in the country. We don't need more taxes. What we need to do is focusing on spending reforms and finding a way to make sure that government works for taxpayers and not overly burdening them with more spending.
And we did a very timely poll recently, and you can read it in its entirety, americansforprosperity.org/Pennsylvania, which really showed that a majority of Pennsylvanians care about how much they're taxed, and they don't want more tax and spend government. They want waste to be cut. You know, we're not anarchist. We'll pay what's our due, but we're arguing that what to do is too much currently.
Well, you said that there'd still be a deficit even after the proposed tax and spend plan by Governor Wolf. What's the deficit coming from?
Just not spending too much and not bringing enough in revenue. That's basically what it comes
right,
down to.
Right, but is there, because I know everyone knows that the pensions are a problem here in Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. and that, I guess, if anything, is the largest part of the deficit. But is there something else, or is it really, does the majority of it just come from pensions, or is there something else? What do the numbers say?
Right, so it's pensions, like you said, but also the growth and welfare. That's another large part of the budget. So pensions and welfare, those two are the biggest drivers. They're the biggest parts of the budget, and those are areas which we really need to look at and reform in order to have sustainable budgets going forward.
And there's just no cost savings in the budget. He doesn't have any kind of liquor privatization, which, depending on who you believe, could save the state quite a bit of money. There is no pension reform in that. There's no spending constraints of any kind. 60 cents of every new dollar going into the state is pension related. So that really needs to be addressed before any conversation of tax increases.
I would love to understand that thinking, that if we just spend more and keep on spending more, that is going to solve our problem. I don't know that I ever will understand it. I don't know that I ever want to understand it. But is there any logic behind that? I mean, we all know, we all have our own household budgets. We all know that sometimes we have to cut areas, you know, if we want to save up for something nice, a new television or something like that, maybe we're not going to have to eat out as much each month. I mean, is there some way where that changes in government, where you can just spend your way out of something?
You're spending other people's money, and there's not many people that can honestly put constraint on that if it's someone else's.
And the problem is eventually you run out of other people's money.
Right.
Now, how has the information gathering process been for you too? Has it been pretty easy to get a lot of this information, or has it cost you quite a bit?
Actually, gathering the information has not been that difficult. The governor puts out what's known as his executive budget, and then he has all the numbers in there. What's sort of been difficult, though, is trying to figure out who this is actually going to affect and how the plan will affect each Pennsylvanian, because you have a lot of moving parts, and there's a lot to take into account when actually deciding whether or not this plan would be good for Pennsylvanians.
That's the confusing part, figuring out who it's going to affect and where. Now, Anna, you were talking about one particular school district in Montgomery County that
this
was really going to hit.
This goes back to House Bill 504, which was a House Republican plan to shift taxes to save property tax. It's a property tax reduction. It's not elimination. It raises the personal income tax and the sales tax, similar to the governor's plan. And the Bryn Athens School District here in Montgomery County is actually, if House Bill 504, the Republican plan, is put into the budget, your tax burden is going to go up 89%. This plan was sold as 50% property tax reduction, but without telling everyone that the PIT, the personal income tax, and the sales tax has to go up to pay for that. So there's going to be individuals in 176 school districts that are, their tax burden is going to go up exponentially for overall about a 5% decrease in your property taxes.
So it's quite clearly a bait and switch, if you will.
Exactly.
Because the property taxes over, and now we're going to, and we're going to head to a break, but we're going to talk more when we get back to the break about the Republican plan, because it has been touted that it's going to get rid of property taxes. Now, there is a property tax reduction, but what we're talking about is the net, because there's going to be an increase in sales and income taxes as well, and that's going to net higher taxes for Pennsylvanians overall.
Exactly.
So we'll talk a little bit more about that. We have Bob Dick here with the Commonwealth Foundation, and we also have Anna McCausland, who is with us from Americans for Prosperity, joining us this morning, talking about the budget proposals going on at your capital in Pennsylvania. We'll be back to the rest of the program right after this.
If we are to guard against ignorance and remain free, it is the responsibility of every American to be informed. A quote from Thomas Jefferson.
School property taxes are out of sight and going up almost every year. Even if you've paid off your mortgage, you haven't paid off the state of Pennsylvania. If you lose your job, you could lose your home too. But there is hope on the horizon. Harrisburg is considering a bill which will eliminate property taxes for school funding. It replaces it with a broad-based small increase in income taxes and sales taxes. This makes all Pennsylvanians responsible for school funding, not just property owners. Please join us at Montgomery County Community College in Pottstown on Thursday, June 25th at 7 p.m. for a town hall meeting to discuss how we can fully fund our schools without taxing people out of their homes. Town hall meeting, Montgomery County Community College in Pottstown on Thursday, June 25th at 7 p.m. Admission is free.
Kings or Parliament could not give the rights essential to happiness. We claim them from a higher source, from the King of Kings and Lord of all the earth. They are not annexed to us by parchments and seals. They are created in us by the decrees of Providence which establish the law of our nature. They are born with us, exist with us, and cannot be taken from us by any human power without taking our lives. A quote from John Dickinson, 1804.
Hi, this is Nancy Becker, the Recorder of Deeds in Montgomery County. I'd like to read a quote from Mark Twain. In the beginning of a change, the patriot is a scarce man, and brave, and hated, and scorned. When his cause succeeds, the timid join him, and then it costs nothing to be a patriot.
Well, now it looks like on the Pennsylvania Harrisburg floor that there's going to be a Republican budget plan, which we're talking about here this morning. We have Bob Dick with the Commonwealth Foundation and Anna McCausland with us from Americans for Prosperity, giving us information on the latest in Pennsylvania budget debate. Good morning and welcome back to the show, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Great to have you guys here. You can go ahead and call in at 610-529. If you'd like, ask a question, 610-529-TALK. The number to call, but we're going to talk about the Republican side of this. Now, it's interesting to know for our listeners that this budget proposal, because this made some good state headlines here, that got voted down 193 votes to zero, by the way. That was actually Governor Wolf putting his legislation out on the website for the governor. Am I understanding that right?
And so there's a website that you can go to, and it lists the full impact, the full every document that the governor put out. He actually put out in legislation form his tax plan. The Democrats did not want to introduce it. I'm hearing there's as many as 40 or 50 kind of the blue dog Democrats in Pennsylvania that don't want new taxes. Their constituents don't want their taxes to go up. So a Republican from York County, Representative Seth Grove, decided the Democrats aren't going to introduce this thing. I've got to. So he put it as an amendment onto another tax code bill. And they brought it up, and there was this debate that this is just a political stunt. You know, the representative actually voted against his own legislation mm-hmm. because it was the governor's plan. So that's been shot down. The governor cannot introduce legislation. Normally, one of the Democrats in leadership or the Republicans in leadership will introduce, you know, the governor's sealed, signed mm-hmm. plan or whatever, mm-hmm. give his blessing to that plan. The Republicans, Representative, I think, Bill Adolph with the Appropriations Committee, the chair of the Appropriations Committee, did introduce a Republican bill that's essentially identical to the budget that was passed last year. So then that plan will get some action, I'm assuming, before the 30th. Then it will go to the Senate Republicans, and they will have to have an agreement behind closed doors. And then they're going to send legislation to the governor, I'm hearing, before June 30th. And then they're going to go home because that they've done their job. The governor, as I said, has his blue pen. He can cross out line item veto things in that legislation, but he can't propose anything new because mm-hmm. he can't introduce legislation. So he will have to then call the legislature back to come to an agreement. We saw this in 2003 with Governor Rendell. That education part of that budget lasted till December, and then we had the infamous 2009 101-day standoff where the legislature is not in session full-time, but they're in Harrisburg a lot more than they would normally be in the summer months, which the more time that they're legislating, the mm-hmm. more time your taxes could go up or another plan,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm. And this line item, if, again, he could just do this to whatever part
Correct.
Of it he wants and then send it back. And then if the House and Senate don't like it, then
they,
what?
I mean, they have to come to an agreement at some point.
Because the deadline is coming closer.
Right. And budgets have lasted past the deadline till they came to an agreement.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no need for the Republicans to cave to any of his demands.
Right. And what's the recourse then? Let's say he completely vetoes many elements of this legislation and just completely changes it by vetoing it. What's the recourse of Republicans then?
They've got to sit down in the same room and come to an agreement on something.
They reverse some of those vetoes after the fact?
If they have three-fourths majority or a supermajority, they have to then vote to override it.
Right. And, I mean, they could also propose another budget and send it to Governor Wolf if they feel that that's necessary and the best course of action. That's mm-hmm. also an option.
Bob, what do you think is going to happen with this whole budget?
If I were a betting man, I would not bet on pretty much anything. I have no idea what's going to happen. I assume, and then I think Anna is right on this, the Republicans will send a budget to Governor Wolf before the June 30 deadline, and then they're going to leave it up to him to decide whether he wants to fight throughout the summer on some of his priorities, or maybe he'll compromise and pass a budget or sign the budget into law that the Republicans send him. So I really not really sure what's going to happen, but it should be interesting.
Now, this is we touched on this a little bit. Let's get in a little bit more to the meat of this Republican proposed bill. Now, what it is going to do is relieve property taxes on some people, not everyone. There's going to be a property tax reduction in some areas, but understand that, and I would probably say overall, maybe not in every area, but overall, am I correct in saying that there would be a net increase, because what it's going to do is increase sales taxes, and income taxes. And that's going to basically outweigh the property tax reduction that is that is so touted by this piece of legislation?
For a lot of people, it will. So this plan, House Bill 504, it was originally House Bill 860. It was introduced by another Republican from York County, Stan Saylor, and it proposes to raise the personal income tax to pay off school districts to keep their millage rates down. And then it raises the sales and use tax to give more money back in the homestead exemption. If, for whatever reason, in a stagnant economy, the personal income tax doesn't grow like it should, then the millage rates are going to go back up because you're no longer paying the school districts off to keep their millage rates low. But they can still raise their millage rates to the rate of the index. So what you have is a plan that robs Peter to pay Paul, takes tax money from your left pocket, puts a little bit back in your right pocket. When have you sent money to Harrisburg? You swirl it around the dome, put it back out into your pocket that you get the same amount back. You don't. So 60% of the state owns a home. Of those homeowners, still about one-third of them are going to have their net increase, tax burden increase, and then the renters, all of them are going to have their increase.
So
tax burden increase.
Just for the background on this, the goal of legislators, which I think is a laudable goal, is to prevent people or protect people from property tax hikes. We don't want to see people lose their homes because they can't pay their taxes. But what this proposal does is just shift the burden of taxation from property owners to those paying income and sales taxes. Now, of course, some of those are the same taxpayers, so they're not necessarily right. going to see a decrease mm-hmm. in their tax burden.
Most people do not own their property. They are paying it off in some form or fashion. So they are still paying those income and sales taxes.
Right. And this really gets to the issue of why these taxes are increasing to begin with. And it's the growth in education expenditures, which is forcing school districts across the state to raise their property taxes. And until we get at the issue, which is the cost drivers in education, we're not really going to see a decrease in the overall tax burden, which is what the ultimate goal should be.
And if we do that, then we may have to figure out a way of changing the status quo. Because it sounds like to me this is just, it's a confusing way of keeping things the way that they are in a lot of ways.
Right, because your personal income tax and your sales tax goes up, mm-hmm. and it'll stay up permanently. But the amount, I mean, there's actually clauses in the bill so that the state and school districts receive no harm. So the state's not going to lose money on this plan. The school districts aren't going to lose money on this plan. It's the taxpayers, again, of course, who mm-hmm. are going to lose money.
And that's the language. It's no harm.
I don't know what the it's a 22-page bill. It's actually not that difficult to read. You'll get okay. incensed with when you do read it.
Sure.
Because there's actually a wording in the bill where $80 million of the sales tax goes to mass transit, which is how they got 33 Democrats to vote for this. And then there's actually a little clause that says this tax relief is a gift to you from the legislature. So
interesting.
But the state can't lose out.
Interesting.
On this plan.
Very, very interesting. Bob and Anna, thank you so much for joining us this morning talking about this proposal. We're going to keep our ears to the phone and see what happens with this as we get closer to the deadline. Bob Dick with the Commonwealth Foundation and Anna McCausland with Americans for Prosperity. When we return, the latest from Ukraine. Don't go away.
Shining forth, we are the Freedom Station, WFYL. Fox News Radio. I'm Chris Foster. A balcony collapse in Berkeley, California, with at least 5 people dead, 8 hurt, some identified as young people from Ireland.
This happened around 12:40 this morning. A balcony literally fell off of the apartment complex 4 stories up. Berkeley police have launched a full investigation. They have informed the people in the unit below that they are not allowed to use their balcony, as part of that balcony has clipped the other one.
Tara Moriarty with Fox affiliate KTVU.
I identify as black.
But her parents say Rachel Dolezal is white, and she has resigned as head of Spokane, Washington's NAACP chapter, telling NBC's Today Show She's thought of herself as black since childhood.
I was drawing self-portraits with the brown crayon instead of the peach crayon and the black, you know, black curly hair. And, you know, yeah, that was how I was portraying myself.
Fox News, we report. You decide.
The American Republic will endure until the day Congress discovers that it can bribe the public with the public's money. Author unknown.
Hi, this is Carla Dedessi, author of the Julia Learns book series and host of Your Family Matters here at 1180 WFYL. Let's make 2015 the year that we read quality books to our children, the future leaders of this country. Please start with my book series, Julia Learns How to Vote Wisely and Julia Learns How to Marry Wisely. Julia Learns How to Vote Wisely is instructing our children to vote with conservative values and the importance of planting those seeds deeply into our children's hearts at an early age. Julia Learns How to Marry Wisely is planting seeds deeply for truth and nobility and righteousness that we see in traditional marriage. They are the only books that are sharing this message with our children, the future leaders of the United States of America. And please keep a lookout for a third book that will be launched this April 2015, Julia Learns How to Protect Life Wisely. Remember, today's readers are tomorrow's future leaders.
The Julia Learns series can be purchased as ebooks, printed books, and on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other Christian retailers.
Chris Christie will be there. Scott Walker will be there. Rick Santorum will be there. You need to be there. The Northeast Republican Leadership Conference at the Sheraton Philadelphia Downtown Hotel, June 18th through the 20th. Meet the top Republican candidates for president right here in Philly. Sign up at 2015leadership.gop. That's 2015leadership.gop. The Northeast Republican Leadership Conference. You can't miss it. Paid for by the Republican Party of Pennsylvania, not authorized by any candidate or candidate committee.
Ronald Reagan once said, "Politics is not a bad profession. If you succeed, there are many rewards. If you disgrace yourself, you can always write a book."
There's an ever-increasing push in Congress to arm Ukraine. Looking at lawmakers in both parties, I'm looking at an article from The Hill, thehill.com, we're supporting a provision in the National Defense Authorization Act, which I actually looked at the thing. I think it's one of those thousand pagers. If you actually look at it and dissect it, it has a table of contents. That's how big it is, to give you an idea. But that would give the Obama administration $300 million for Ukrainian security assistance. The revision specifies that half of the funding would be withheld until at least 20% of the money is spent on lethal aid. While not the focus of its veto threat, the administration argues that the provision forces the hand of President Obama on a foreign policy decision, quote, that should rest with the executive branch. We're seeing that thinking extend to a little bit more than just the federal government this morning. Welcome to the program. It's a new day, 1180 WFYL. You can call in at 610-539-TALK. We're joined again with Bob Dick and Anna McCausland. Bob Dick with the Commonwealth Foundation and Anna McCausland with Americans for Prosperity. We were just talking about Pennsylvania budget politics that are happening in Harrisburg right now and the June 30th deadline to get a budget passed. What we're going to talk about now, though, is what may be the real cause of this budget. And apparently there's a difference of opinion as to what even the cause of our budget problems are. Anna, why don't you go ahead and start us off with that?
Well, the new story, I guess, in Harrisburg is that the Republicans, the Senate Republicans and the House Republicans, have agreed that the structural deficit is only $1.2 billion. So the Republicans know, I guess, what needs to be filled. The governor, however, still is going by his numbers that say there's a $2.5 billion structural deficit. So it's interesting that the players can't even agree on what the problem is in number form. We know that the problem is pension reform, the high cost of spending, as Bob said earlier, in the welfare department. What's the new name for the Department of Public Welfare?
Department of Human Services.
They renamed it last year. So we know, the Commonwealth Foundation and Americans for Prosperity, and I think most citizens know what the problems are. And I guess it's just taking a little longer.
Yeah, public welfare, that's kind of a politically inflammatory term, especially when you're talking about reform that involves welfare and pensions here in Pennsylvania now. Pension reform, what is the real answer, though, if we're looking at this? Because if we kind of take apart the issue, we're looking at a lot of people who are probably seniors who are living off of their pensions, reforming that off the bat, you know, as we're looking at the largest generation, the baby boomer generation retiring right now in the midst of retirement, who's probably on a lot of those pensions that are causing a lot of the problems here. What are we to do with this issue? This is quite a problem that we have here in Pennsylvania, because like you said, everyone knows that pensions are the issue. They're a political hot button because of that, but at the same time, it's unsustainable, unfortunately, where we're at. So, Bob, let me go to you with that one.
Right, so I would say three things. First, we need to stop the bleeding, and that means putting all new employees into a 401k-type plan, which is known as a defined contribution plan. And this would get politics out of the pension process and just require state government to contribute a set portion of the salary for employees. This way, they don't have unfunded liabilities or debt piling up in the future if investment returns don't meet their expected projections. That's the first thing. Second, modifying future benefits, not benefits already earned for current employees, but modifying future benefits again to make sure that we're not adding to this unfunded liability. And finally, have to pay down the pension debt. I know Representative McGinnis has proposed a plan to get Pennsylvania on a pension-paying schedule that would eventually pay off this debt. So, you know, which is responsible and would eventually eliminate the unfunded liability, and all those things together would constitute real pension reform.
I would love to know who holds most of that debt for Pennsylvania. Because you may find that the person who holds that debt is probably getting involved in the political sphere, I would garner to say.
Right, and it's really benefits that are, the unfunded liability is money that the government needs to be investing right now that it's not investing in order to get a what's known as a 75% rate of return on investments, and they have to have $53 billion right now invested in order to pay off future benefits. That's what the unfunded liability is. So it's future benefits for employees. And again, this is the result of a system that is very, very political. And we've had instances in the past where benefits were increased and benefits were not paid for. So again, it's a very political process. And that's why we suggest the Commonwealth Foundation, I'm sure IFP as well, wants to move public employees into this 401k type plan to get taxpayers out of this business of having to make up the difference when investments don't meet their return, their projection.
Now, I'm also hearing, too, these are, and to clarify for the listener, by the way, if you just tuned in, welcome to the program. It's a new day on 1180 WFYL, talking about the headlines this morning, all from a Christian perspective. But we are looking, though, and we're looking at the Pennsylvania budget, and the biggest problem in the budget right now is pension reform. That's the biggest issue, because the pension is eating away so much of our budget. Now, it's important to note that we're this has to do with state employees. This doesn't have to do with private employees. We're not talking about pension reform for private employees. And that's, you know, I mean, how else would it be a state problem if it was private?
It's and the reason why we're not talking about it is because so many large corporations and private sector companies have already made the switch to a 401k type plan. Mm-hmm. And in my generation, we're just happy to have a retirement. I mean, we pretty much assume that Social Security is not going to be there whenever we reach 65. The issue is that the government is so long to catch up to the new market dynamics of private companies.
Well, whenever I hear rising debt on the part of the state government as far as pensions, the one thing that I begin to think is unions. Unions are involved somehow in this because it's as political as it gets, especially in this state of Pennsylvania.
Well, and they don't want to recognize the fact that pensions is the largest cost driver in school budgets. 70 to 80% of the cost of employees at the school district level is administrative cost, health care, salaries, other benefit, you know, these retirement benefits. So only 30% is going into the classroom. And yet, what do you hear in the Capitol building but the screams of children in the dome?
Education.
We need more money for children. Well, you know, the unions, they represent the interests of the teachers. And of course, everyone wants to make more money. Whether or not the state can afford it, you know, that we want pension reform because individuals have entered into a contract and we don't fault the individuals. However, the unions are their own worst enemy because they're defending higher taxes, more spending, more benefits. And as we've seen at the city level across the country and soon in Pennsylvania, it's going to go bankrupt.
Well, right. And they're looking very short term. They're looking at their needs, but at their needs are going to be at the cost of everyone else. Unfortunately, that's just how it's looking to work. Now, we know that a lot of the state unions, we were talking about an issue beforehand. Bob, you were joining us with that one, tell us about it. If I'm recalling it correctly, there was taxpayer money being used for a function of the unions, which should just be completely put up to their own devices.
Right. So in Pennsylvania, there's a system whereby taxpayer resources are used to collect the political dollars for government unions. And it's actually two pools of funds. You have union dues, a portion of which can be used for a variety of political activities, as well as PAC contributions or direct campaign contributions. And this is just one of the many privileges that government unions are given thanks to special interests and lawmakers who are really cozy with the unions.
So taxpayer money being used to basically collect political contributions for state unions.
Right.
So this was a bill that was introduced a couple of weeks, maybe even months ago now at this point. And what happened with it?
Well, it didn't receive enough votes in the Senate. It received 24, I believe, and at the time it needed 25 to get it passed in the Senate. But the issue's come a long way. I mean, this is common sense. Most Pennsylvanians agree, even most union households would say, that taxpayer resources should not be used to help collect the political dollars for not just unions, but any organization. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what the organization is. You shouldn't be using taxpayer resources to help bankroll political campaigns.
And that's what's happening, and that bill did not pass. But now that we're talking the budget, we're going to be talking more about unions. We're going to be talking about more about how they are using taxpayer money, how they're getting taxpayer money, whether it's in the form of pensions, which are causing a problem, which, again, is the elephant in the room here for Pennsylvanians. And that's what we're going to be talking more about as we approach the June 30th deadline. And hopefully this thing is going to get more into the sphere of public discourse because it needs to. I feel a lot of Pennsylvanians are not necessarily aware of all the things that are happening in Harrisburg right now. That's why we bring persons like yourselves on who go and study all the information and confusing government jargon for us and then are able to enlighten us on the facts and what they are. Because we do not have full-time jobs to devote, because you would need a full-time job to devote to look after bill after bill after bill and read all that. I was amazed at the authorization for defense. Was it the National Defense Authorization Act? I was amazed at how long that one document was. It basically just, at the federal level, approves spending for the military at different levels, and some much of which is very much needed. But tucked away within that, you'll find everything. And to read every page, you would need a full-time job. We've got to head to a break, but we're going to continue looking at the PA budget with Bob Dick and with Anna McCausland here on 1180 WFYL. It's a new day. We'll be back in just a moment.
Hi, I'm Doug Floro, President and Certified Financial Planner at MFB Wealth Management. In Matthew 25, the parable of the 10 talents warns us that not investing the master's talents because of fear is wrong. Doing nothing can be a sin.
So what are the consequences of doing nothing?
In this parable, the first thing we see is that the Lord is not pleased. The one talent is taken away and given to the one that has 10 talents. Finally, the unprofitable servant is cast into outer darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth.
Wow, that sounds harsh.
It certainly does. Now, none of us is a perfect steward, but if you feel like you are just coasting along and it's time to make some changes, please call our office at 215-723-8999.
MFB Wealth Management, 215-723-8999, on the web at mfbwm.com. Securities and advisory services offered through Genios Wealth Management, member FINRA SIPC.
History was made on today's date. Stay tuned for an American Minute with Bill Federer.
The father of the American space program died this day, June 16, 1977. He developed the famed V-2 rocket for Germany before emigrating to the U.S., where in 1958 he launched America's first satellite. He became the director of NASA, the U.S. Guided Missile Program, and founded the National Space Institute. His name was Wernher von Braun, who stated, "The laws of nature that enable us to fly to the moon also enable us to destroy our home planet. The guidelines of what we ought to do are furnished in the moral law of God."
This has been an American Minute with Bill Federer. For a free transcript, call American Minute at 1-888-USA-WORD.
Father's Day is a great time to consider God's role as father. As a father of six and grandfather to nine, I've thought much about my role, and this I've learned. The more we men emulate God, the Heavenly Father, the better the husband and father will be. I'm Sam Rohr, president of the American Pastors Network. As our fatherhood model, God's the wise father, the great counselor and comforter. He's just, kind, merciful, and patient. He instructs and guides, protects and shields. He firmly disciplines but loves unconditionally. He loves so much he gave his son, the perfect sacrifice to save our souls. He's the humble servant, yet the greatest leader. He's the model in every way of what an earthly father should be. To you, fathers and grandfathers, I ask, how much do you resemble God the Father? Remember, you are the picture of God to your wife and children. What view of God do they have? I'm Sam Rohr, president of the American Pastors Network, asking you, my fellow fathers, this Father's Day, to think about this.
Sign up as a partner at papastors.net.
In our last segment, we talked about this very briefly at the beginning, but now a bill that has gone or pushing the Senate to give lethal assistance to Ukraine. It's been long overdue. John McCain chimed in, said the NDAA, which is the National Defense Authorization Act, doesn't force the president to provide lethal assistance to Ukraine. He said, in response to the administration's threat, trust me, if there were a way to do that, it would be in the bill. Welcome to the program. It's a new day on 1180 WFYL. You can call in 610-539-TALK. Joining us again, we have Bob Dick and Anna McCausland. Bob Dick with the Commonwealth Foundation and Anna with Americans for Prosperity. We're talking about budget reform in Pennsylvania. The deadline is quickly approaching. June 30th is a day when a budget is going to have to be passed. Two biggest issues that we face in this are, one, pensions, and education reform, which is going to be able to hopefully take a lot of the burden off of the taxpayer. And Bob, you have some ideas as to what we can do maybe to reform education.
Right. So going back to the debate over tax shifting and the reason why taxes are so high, it's because of the education expenditures and their rapid growth. And so instead of shifting the burden of taxation, what we suggest is looking at the expenditure side of the ledger and a number of reforms. So first, prevailing wage reform, which would end the prevailing wage mandate, which basically is a mandate that artificially increases the cost of construction projects on government-financed projects. Second, a collective bargaining reform. Right now, the process is not really transparent, and so what we want to do is open up that process and allow taxpayers to have some input. So if there's a contract that is unfair to taxpayers, they can have a say, and by doing so, then they may be able to have a more reasonable contract that does not cost as much.
Well, and let's put this into layman's terms with prevailing wage. I mean, kind of a line that glossed people over. In my area, in the Harrisburg area, there was a school and a Walmart being built on the same road by the same construction company. Basically the same spend also in total dollars, total millions of dollars. The school district was 40% more, the school building, to build than the Walmart. Now, if safety is a concern, you don't have any concern taking your children into Walmart across Pennsylvania. You know that the building's not going to fall in on you. But that's the number one thing we hear about prevailing wage. You can't pay people less because you're going to have a worse product. Well, no. I believe that whether I walk into a Walmart or whether the school my children attend is going to be built to code and safely, not because of what people are paid.
That's a pretty weak argument, because if I was one of those construction workers, I wouldn't want to be building something which I thought was structurally unstable because I wasn't getting paid what I thought I would be paid. I have a feeling that many workers would probably say the same thing, that they wouldn't want to build something like, you know, that's a weak argument.
Prevailing wage jobs are looked at on the construction industry as a bonus.
Mm-hmm.
They're normally used to making their wage.
Right. It's an inflation of the price that's to the benefit of these contracted companies for state government jobs.
Right, and that means more taxpayer dollars going to these projects, and that's less money for schools. And then, of course, that means that if they have less money, they're going to be looking for more in the future, and they may have to raise taxes as a result.
Yeah, they're going to need more and more money because they have less and less to work with, even though the taxes go up and up and up. So that's one way to go ahead and cut the costs as we're talking about the budget on Pennsylvania. And if you just joined us, welcome to the program. Michael Evans here. It's 1180 WFYL. It's a new day. Bob Dick with the Commonwealth Foundation joining us, and Anna McCausland with Americans for Prosperity telling us about the latest in Pennsylvania budget reform. So we were talking about some ways to go ahead and relieve this burden that we find in the budget. Two biggest areas, pension and education, from what I'm hearing now. And education, okay, is one of the ways that we could kind of limit this burden in a different way. Bob, you're just talking about some different ways that we could do that.
Right, and I would say pension reform is included in those education expenditures too at the local level. And obviously that's another area that needs to be looked at to prevent more tax increases going forward. Also, there's this issue of school choice. There are two programs that are very successful, very popular, that educate students or provide them with an education at a fraction of the cost of public education, the Opportunity Scholarship Tax Credit Program, as well as the Educational Improvement Tax Credit Program. And again, these are programs that provide an education to students at a fraction of the cost, which means that they can go to the school of their choice and do so at a lower cost to taxpayers. That seems like a win-win-win, right? You won't have more students in the public school system, so property taxes won't have to increase.
Mm-hmm.
And students and families get to decide the school that's right for them. I mean, it seems like a no-brainer to me, right?
Right. Well, I'm guessing there's opposition, though, to the no-brainer. There's always opposition to the no-brainer, as Anna rolls her eyes over there at the other side of the microphone. There's always opposition to the no-brainer.
Right.
What's the opposition?
You have union opposition to having children and families decide the school that's best for them because they feel that it's taking resources away from the public schools. But the focus should be on the family and the student. It shouldn't be on one particular building. And that's the thing that people miss when we're talking about school choice. It's about the people. It's not about how much money we can funnel into school districts.
It's about giving the choice to the person.
Exactly.
To say if they want to get educated somewhere else, then they should do that. Because, and this is what people hopefully should begin to realize – that this money that we're pumping into governments, whether at the state or the federal level, doesn't tend to be utilized in the best way. That's why the Founding Fathers set up our federal government the way that it is, so that the people would be able to have choice, to kind of be a check against any kind of centralization of power. And the same is true for Pennsylvania here. And a lot of where the power comes from is money. So if we're able to funnel that in ways that give the people a choice, then we're going to resolve a lot of our issues. Because right now what you're dealing with is a centralization of power in Harrisburg in a lot of ways. Whether you want to say it ends at the unions or just politicians or wherever it ends, quote unquote, it does not change. The same is still true that we're centralizing power right now in Pennsylvania. And any way that we could change that, we should. I think that's probably the most American thing we could probably talk about, is decentralization of power. So, Anna, what are some other ways then maybe that we can look at education? And Bob, if you had some other points to make there, go ahead and make them as far as changes we could do for education reform.
Sure. Just quickly, two more things. Collective bargaining transparency, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, would allow taxpayers to have a say in this process, as well as what's called a weighted student funding formula, because right now, the way it works is education it operates under a hold harmless formula. So that means that districts receive the same amount of money that they received the prior year, even if they lose students. And that really doesn't make that much sense. So what we want to do is see dollars follow the child. So if they're going from one district to another, that the money will follow them, and that will allow more efficient use of resources.
And I think you have to look at dispelling some of the lies. I'm not a fan of Governor Corbett. I mean, AFP is a nonpartisan organization. We look at policy,
which is valuable,
right.
Is very valuable.
Right. So we don't fall into, you know, the trap of personality.
Mm-hmm.
But Governor Corbett did not cut $1 billion out of education spending. The President Obama gave that in stimulus dollars, and it went away because the president no longer funded that. So let's talk about the cost driver. You know, there's also Marcellus Shale in this area. Individuals may be more likely to support Marcellus Shale tax, but believe it or not, the Marcellus Shale companies pay the same corporate net income tax that as every other corporation, and also they have an impact fee. So there's a lot of discussions about taxes going up.
You know, from a Christian perspective, my father said this, and I tend to agree with him, that the biggest problem in our nation right now is covetousness. And that basically says, you have something that I want,
right. And
I'm going to do anything I can to take it from you. And tax the rich, give to the poor, tax the rich, give to the poor. A lot of that comes from that one place, covetousness. And we need to realize that our problems go deeper than just political problems here in the nation. We're wrapping up the program today. Thank you so much for listening. 1180 WFYL, it's a new day. Bob Dick joining us with the Commonwealth Foundation and Anna McCausland with AFP. It's wonderful to have both of you. And we will see you tomorrow, 7 to 9, on It's a New Day.
Have you checked out our podcast on our WFYL homepage? Did you know you could stream us anytime, night or day, 24/7 at 1180WFYL.com? If you like what you hear on WFYL, please email us at info@1180WFYL.com to let us know.